yourself up, like, in a weird way, like doing something weird in your sleep.
Have you?
I have, in fact.
Okay.
Woken myself up singing the national anthem.
Wow.
Three times now.
Three different times.
Three
different
times, yeah.
Okay.
I usually wake up on the Rockets' red blare.
Uh-huh. Glare.
Whatever. I'm asleep when it's happening.
The Rockets. Hey, let me ask you a question. What do you mean by the Rockets' red blare? Is this a person named Blair?
It's like a noise.
Yeah, the redness of the Rockets is blaring.
All right, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff with me, as always, Pastor David Bowser.
How are you doing, Patrick?
And Elise McCarter.
Still here, still pretty successful.
So, what a week we have experienced.
Yeah. Buddy.
Yeah.
Wild ride.
A little behind the scenes podcast. We recorded this Wednesday early afternoon. We record Wednesday early afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And for this last...
Just before all the excitement.
Yes. And then Pastor Dave and I left this and went into a meeting. Mm-hmm. And in the middle of that meeting, I looked at my phone and I'm like, oh.
Because he wasn't paying attention to the meeting we're in.
Yeah, well, we were winding up. The Capitol...
There's a coup.
...is under siege.
Yeah.
What is happening?
No big deal.
So we are going to...
We did not address it on last week's episode.
We did not address it.
Because it had not happened when we recorded last
week. Yes. But we will address it.
And we didn't...
We're on too lazy this to week.
Yeah.
So if you're coming to Beyond Sunday for the hottest of hot takes, it's probably not going to be there.
This one's pretty hot.
Well, I mean, like, I think Wednesday afternoon would have been a lot hotter, that's for sure.
Sure, but I think this is warm enough that I would want a hot mitt if I were pulling this out of the oven.
Okay.
Oh, boy.
Well.
Did I overextend the metaphor?
A little bit, yeah.
But we are going to talk a little bit about that. We've obviously, you know, been processing that in our individual lives, on the news, in our families.
Mm-hmm.
Watching or reading quite a lot. I've read quite a lot from different Christian organizations, what they have to say about this, whether that's on Twitter or through news media, just to kind of get an idea of, like, what is the Christian reaction to what's going on, since we want to help provide that. So we'll get into that, but first we're going to get into some news.
Woo! Fun news, I hope?
Yes, fun news, I think so.
Yeah.
Do you know who Ricky Gervais is?
Yes.
Yeah. He's a comedian. He,
the British Office.
The British Office. He did a movie called, what is it, Something About Lying.
The Invention of Lying.
Yeah, which was a pretty funny movie. And yeah.
He always gets in trouble when he hosts the Oscars.
He usually does. He doesn't host the Oscars anymore.
He hosts the Golden Globes, I believe. Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah, they're all the same.
But yeah, so he's a British comedian. And he has been, like most people, as you get older, pondering death, what happens after death. He's a famous atheist.
Yes.
Yeah.
But what does he want?
Famous for the fact that he's an atheist. Not just like, oh, he's famous and he's an atheist. He's like,
right.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's open about,
yeah. He's an outspoken atheist. Yeah.
Just wanted to be clear. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. You know, what? And what do you want to do with your body post-death? So he put this statement out there, and he's been denied by the London Zoo to have his body fed to the lions there. Because this is what he wanted to do, that after death, I thought it'd be good to just be fed to the lions at the London Zoo. That would be useful, wouldn't it? Because we never give anything back, we take everything from this world. So, there you go. In death, throw me to the lions.
Yeah, I mean,
appreciate how that's like a philosophical statement there on the end, you know?
Sure.
Yeah, they denied him.
Understandably.
Yes.
You don't want zoo lions to achieve a taste for human flesh.
For flesh, yes.
That seems like something you want
like
to avoid.
A snack,
You look familiar.
Right.
I suspect...
Some paprika in your pocket?
The COO of the London Zoo said, I suspect Ricky may be a bit gristly for our lions.
I see what he did there.
Yeah,
so let me ask you, you know...
I do not want to be fed to the lions.
You don't want to be fed to the lions?
No.
If you were to die, what would you want done with
I mean,
your,
I will die someday.
You know, well, if you were to die in the relatively near future.
Oh, okay. Mm.
What would you want done with your body?
Preserved in plexiglass and put on display somewhere.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But like...
Write that into your will. We can work that out for
very
you.
Very fancy.
Sure.
I want to look fancy post-mortem.
Yeah.
Like, what's his face in Russia? Lenin.
Sure. Walt Disney, maybe.
Walt Disney's cryogenically frozen head. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I want to be. Yeah. Yes.
Did Walt Disney wear bow ties?
Yes.
Sure. Why not?
Okay.
Taxidermied.
Yes.
Put on display.
The, I could be taxidermied.
Yes. The peak of male fitness here.
Yeah. Yes,
put me. Yeah. No, I
taxidermy me into like a superhero costume. That'd be fun.
Sure.
I think you can wear whatever once you're taxidermy.
Yeah, I want
possibilities are endless.
I want the original Captain America costume. That's what I want.
The original one, like the from the movies, or what do you mean by the original?
I don't know. The one that makes you look good.
That's okay, the one that makes you look good.
I think, I mean, it's Chris Evans right now, so they all They all look good.
Yeah.
Oh, I see how it is. Mm. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, soon it's going to be on my dead body.
So. That complicates things. Yeah. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I definitely, you know, I'd say for me, look, whatever my body can do to benefit another human being, I'm for it.
Oh, that's nice of you.
You know, so.
That's touching.
That it. Whether
you
that's
just want to be taxidermied and put on display.
Feed me. If the lions won't eat me, maybe the tigers will. Is what I'm saying. So, you know, like,
yeah. I think cremation is probably my. If we were all for a serious option, cremation is probably my method of choice.
It's probably the most economical.
It's absolutely the most economical and can be the most environmental.
I did see that. You could become a tree.
Yeah, I kind of like that idea.
Well, yeah, because you don't really become a tree. You're just kind of placed
you're in the
with
soil
a root,
with a tree.
With like a seed, and then the tree
your ashes
grows.
Don't become a tree. Yeah. The tree just.
I did see your ashes could be pressed into a diamond.
I like that too.
There you go. Yes. Do you like that?
I do like that.
Who's going to wear your diamond?
Your dead.
I don't know.
Your dead ash diamond?
Yeah, I'm just going to put it in my will that whoever survives me has to mail it to somebody.
Okay. Maybe you could say to your daughter, Gray, this will have to be your wedding band.
This is your engagement ring.
You're
congratulations.
Welcome.
Well, hopefully I live past then.
You know.
Be your granddaughter.
That's right. Great granddaughter.
Great.
I'm going to be around for a while.
Yeah, okay.
Eat a lot of
salads. Well, you know, now we're eat a lot of solids.
Salads,
that makes more sense.
The
I eat a lot of solids.
The zoo also said, look, if you really want to give something back, we also take donations.
Right,
so.
We take money, yeah. You can feed the lions without having to give us your body.
Right.
Yeah, we can give them a more sustainable diet and suitable diet. Yeah. Yeah, they can't have this, every week a new dead comedian is just thrown to the lions.
Sounds like a new game show.
Sure.
Or like a Hollywood award show, you lose and your body's thrown to the lions.
Yeah, look, I could think, put a camera in there, charge some money to watch it.
People would watch it,
unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, ancient Rome sort of proved that, I think.
Sure.
Oh, right. Yeah, we did that already. Mm-hmm. All right, we tried that failed experiment. On to something else.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Hyenas this time. No more lions.
Let's talk about our main news.
Hmm.
A little processing what happened at the Capitol. So we have one main
Capitol
article that we are going to be drawing from. So
we're all just going to walk past the spelling travesties of last week.
What?
No one knows the difference between capital with an O and capital with an A.
Well, I was focused on the actual news, so.
Capital with an O is the building. Pretty much everything else is capital with an A.
Okay.
Just
okay.
That's important that we all know that.
So
whenever we're talking today, know that I'm saying capital with an O because we're referring to the building.
I'm probably saying capital with an A because I'm not very good at spelling. So.
Admitting that is important. That's good.
Yeah. So we're using from a blog here written by a lawyer and conservative pundit, David French.
Mm-hmm. Didn't we make the pundit joke last week?
Was we it? Did, yeah, yes. Yeah, thank you.
So if you're interested, I'm looking at this. I think he writes for his website, The Dispatch.
The Dispatch.
The Dispatch, mm-hmm. Yes.
Something about the French press, too. Is that like the
I think that's his head? Blog on that website.
On the French press.
Because his last name is French.
Ah, now I get it. Oh. I did not put those two together and get it until just now. I was like, that's weird that this guy's writing like a French website.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, now I get it.
I was wondering, yeah.
And, I read a lot of different articles here. I chose this one specifically because I found it very interesting, and I was kind of wondering what the more conservative branch of Christianity's would, how their reaction would look like.
Yeah.
Sure.
Speaking, working for the ELCA and the three of us probably, on this podcast, we would say we kind of work for more of a left-wing branch of Christianity, more of that kind of engage there.
We're definitely not working for the branch of Christianity that's showing up at a Trump rally, announcing him that we have had prophetic visions of his winning the presidency. We're definitely not working for that branch of Christianity.
Right.
Yeah. And so, just seeing okay, well, what, since I kind of get this perspective, I wanted to seek out other perspectives of what is happening at the Capitol so we can kind of engage with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So, and I think he's going to write a lot, very critical of how conservative Christianity's role being played in what happened at the Capitol. And I think that's valuable. And I want to say, this is coming from a strong conservative evangelical voice. Mm-hmm. I don't want it to sound like we're just beating up on people that are different than myself.
Right.
Yeah. So now he opens this thing, his article here. I'm going to be honest. I can't shake the sadness. I can't shake the anger. Let's start there. How did you feel watching this? Maybe let's, process for us here in the room. Let's maybe start. How did we felt watching what was happening in our Capitol?
I was appalled.
Yeah.
Just the hypocrisy blew me away. But
sure.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we, as you said, we found out, like, during a meeting on Wednesday and then had other duties and stuff like that to attend to. And so I think it was really, like, Friday before it really started to hit me.
Sure.
And it was Friday as I was working on a sermon for Sunday. That's when it started to make sense of, like, wow, like, what exactly can we even say about ourselves anymore?
Yeah.
Because, you know, we have, for the last 200 and almost 250 years, said, you know, what is central to America's success is a peaceful transition of power, mm-hmm. even between people who disagree with one another.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, we've decided to throw that out the window.
Yeah.
So I don't know that I can describe what I was feeling or experiencing at the time, other than just, yeah. I even now, I can't put it to words.
Yeah, I mean, looking at kind of the pictures and videos that have come with this, you definitely see, you know, some high levels of violence
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
things like that to it. And I think you also see, like, a high level of, like, some of these people kind of a little bit being like, I'm not even really sure what I'm doing here.
Yeah.
Like, now what? Kind of a thing. We're in the Capitol building. We're taking selfies. What is supposed to come from this?
Yeah.
Like, I think, like, watching people have this misguided view, if we just get in the building, things will change. Mm-hmm. And then they got in the building, mm-hmm. and then they're like, okay, where's the change?
Yeah.
And for me, in some ways, it even, I can say, I have a little pity for some of those people who are, I believe, very misled
yeah.
in getting to that point.
Sure.
Now, that doesn't absolve them, and I hope that every person who entered the Capitol illegally is prosecuted to the full extent for their crimes. But I also kind of like, what did you think was going to happen?
Mm-hmm.
You were going to storm the Capitol, go to Olive Garden later, and then get on a flight back home like nothing ever happened.
Right.
Why would you think that?
Why would you choose Olive Garden as the restaurant of choice of insurrectionists?
That's what I want to... It feels right to me. Yeah.
What would you say? An Applebee's? Come on, like, yeah. I don't know.
I mean, I just don't feel like...
I thought a chain restaurant just seemed like...
Sure, but a chain with free breadsticks. I mean, come on.
That's it, yeah.
All right,
so I have comments. Somebody keeps myself
about Olive Garden or about an insurrection.
Free stuff and right wing insurrectionists
and getting their free breadsticks. Yes.
We demand our free breadsticks, right. People. Okay, we could not overthrow this election, but at least give us breadsticks.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so David French opens. I'm going to be honest. I can't shake the sadness. I can't shake the anger. We have to be clear about what happened in Washington D.C. on January 6th. A violent Christian insurrection invaded and occupied the Capitol.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So a bold introduction. Again, a very conservative voice in Christianity. Why do I say this was a Christian insurrection? And I think this is where we're going to kind of see some of these hard things and hurtful things. I know seeing images of people waving a flag that say Jesus saves.
Yeah.
As they're, you know, coming into the Capitol, or alongside people wearing shirts that say Camp Auschwitz and yeah. things like that. Or I saw an image of a woman helping build a gallows wearing a faith,
mm-hmm.
family, freedom shirt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That is hard, right?
Yeah.
A giant wooden cross being carried around into the Capitol. These are the images sprinkled into this, and I think it's impossible to separate them from what else is going on.
Right.
I think that they are intrinsically linked.
Yeah.
Whether I really genuinely wish they were not, they are. That's just the reality of the situation. And this also happened a few days after Christian conservatives led a Jericho march at the mm-hmm. Capitol to... Yeah. try to overturn the election through mm-hmm. the power of Jesus, I guess, that they were going to march.
The power of Jericho, anyway.
Yeah, march around yeah. the march through Washington, just like God
seven
in,
times.
In Joshua takes
and trumpets,
yeah.
and shofars, and they actually they did have shofars. They had the ram's horns yes. that they were blowing us.
Well, if you're going to do it right, I guess.
Yes.
Details are important.
You can't fault them for the effort.
Yes,
no
I'm
way.
Sure they were.
Yeah, you can't fault them.
I'm sure they were saying shofar, show good. So.
Wow. Don't encourage him, Elise.
It was good.
Thank you. That is pretty good. Yeah. Yeah. So that is tough, right? And I think mm-hmm. if we were really being honest with ourselves, if we watched this, and as a nation, and a lot of us watched a group of Middle Eastern men mm-hmm. shouting Allah Akbar, Islamic music playing as they kicked down the doors of the Capitol and marching through, all of us would associate that with an Islamic movement.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, and that's probably pretty fair. I mean, I could say I try to be reasonable, and you know, I probably would do that too. You know, like that would be easy to do.
Well, one thing that I was thinking when I was seeing the footage of like the Christian flags and the crosses and that kind of thing is this must be what every Muslim feels like when they watch footage of a jihadist. Mm. You know, mm-hmm. like just this betrayal and this twisting of what you believe and
how dear. No, I think that's a great point. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we're going to get into this a little bit, but I think this is a great example of how, you know, anytime something like that happens, you know, post 9/11 or post any incident involving an Islamic faith, right? The calls come out of why isn't every Islamic person denouncing this and saying this isn't what we stand for? And I was like, okay, well, Christians, let's go.
Yeah,
this is our turn. I can step up and say this is not what we stand for, and you do not speak for our faith, and you are not in line with the teachings of Jesus Christ or the teachings of our church.
Yeah. So this was obviously wrong. I mean, it turned into this riot, this kind of insane thing to witness. Again, some people clearly going there for vengeance. Some people, I think, coming there from, I'm not even sure really what I'm doing here.
Yeah,
right. I bet.
Getting swept along.
They probably did not wake up that day imagining they would find themselves in the Capitol, but went to this Trump rally outside the Capitol, marched to the Capitol, saw the doors being open, swept up in emotion, and went on in with everybody else, thinking change was legitimately happening. This is 1776. This is a new way we're going to, you know, bring about what we want in this country, and then watch it all fall apart. I mean, but this riot is obviously unacceptable, right? Like, I think even though I can empathize with, I think it's even Martin Luther says riots can be the voice of the unheard. And I think I can certainly agree with that and feel that. I don't think that this is that.
Well, as a white middle-class person in America, you're certainly not the voice of the unheard. You're the voice of the majority to begin with.
I hear that. I do think that there is an arm of this movement that feels unheard.
Feel that way.
Yeah, I think the perception is that they... Look what President Trump tapped into when he was elected in the first ban, right? He tapped into this sense of you're being left behind, right? Yeah. You're middle-class America, and you're being left behind because we want to lift up the poor, or because we want to send these jobs across the seas or whatever. Like, you're being left behind. And I think it's tapped into that and given people a sense of, I do feel that. You know, whether that's what we perceive as reality or not, I think the perception is there of, this is how I'm experiencing the world, and it's giving me that outlet, if you will. I mean, I'm coming together with like-minded people who do think that I'm left behind. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, you know, this summer we saw protests, we even saw rioting going on, and I think we can say, man, it does not serve your cause this summer of black activism, especially in the relationship with the police and authority. By burning down small businesses, by throwing those things, that doesn't help get those things, and it's not necessarily justifiable. Even something as atrocious as, whether you believe it or not, the community believes, innocent black men and women are killed by police officers. Even if you say, I don't think that's true, it's undeniable, black community thinks that's true.
Mm-hmm.
And it motivates them to block traffic, and motivates them to come out to the street. So if you're saying that kind of riot is not, this is certainly not. Then this riot is certainly not, because it's not justified by anything more than maybe wild election conspiracy theories, false belief in a QAnon-enabled, that cannibal pedophiles are controlling Washington, that these lies that are so fed into this movement, that I think that was maybe the hardest thing for me to see, and again, that aspect of pity there, is that these men and women storming the Capitol were doing so for a lie.
Mm-hmm.
Like that they were doing so because they've been fed over and over and over again that the election is stolen from them, over and over and over again. The Capitol is filled with these pedophiles, this New World Order, you know, deep state pedophiles. And this is what they have to do about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really tough, right? Like, to think like that lie is so pervasive. And we on the podcast have addressed the QAnon conspiracy theory and Christian nationalism, which I think would be good kind of segues into this, you know, because we've seen this kind of thing coming. And I think that's, for me, the hard part of watching what was happening two Wednesdays ago, is that it was so obviously coming on some level.
Yeah.
That this was going to boil over. That you can't keep saying this over and over and over again, that the election was stolen from you, and not expect someone to start believing it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And start acting on it. And especially when those voices saying that are from the Christian community. That's where it gets the hardest of all, right? Like that Christian leaders are telling people lies, not based in reality. You have to start thinking some of them are going to start believing it and then doing the natural steps. What happens if you believe the election was stolen from us? Well, you should act on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if that's real, you should do something about it. And so the problem is, well, it's not real. Like, and there's nothing you can do about it because it's not a reality. And so David here, David French, is going to go in. Not you, David.
Mm.
Is going to go into kind of like...
The French David.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Oui. Ho, ho, oui, oui.
Baguette.
Eiffel Tower. I don't know what else is French.
He says, you know...
Nudiness.
Snails.
Yeah.
Escargot.
Yeah. Escargot. Yeah.
Mimes. Nobody can see that.
Yeah, but I was miming. I was doing it.
Mime's a tough thing to do on the podcast.
We have a guest that's a mime.
I did mime with a French accent.
We've had a mime here every week. Yes. The problem is that, here's what he says here. The problem is that all too many Christians are in the grips of two sets of lies.
Mm-hmm.
We'll call them the enabling lies and the activating lies. And unless you deal with the enabling lies, the activating lies will constantly pollute the body politic and continue to spawn violent unrest. All right, so what's the difference between the two kinds of lies?
Mm.
The enabling lie...
Oh, I thought that was a question. Yeah. All right, go ahead.
We were ready.
I'll get into his... sure,
the one time. No, no, Patrick, you go ahead.
Right. We weren't actually ready. Oh.
The enabling lie is the lie that makes you fertile ground for the activating lie that actually motivates a person to charge a thin blue line at the Capitol or take a rifle to a pizza parlor,
mm-hmm.
or things like that. So
right.
All the enabling lies are the things that kind of set the tone for that kind of a thing.
Okay.
So it's laying down the gasoline, the gunpowder, and the activating lie is the spark.
Mm-hmm.
So what are the enabling lies that have been fed? And we can start here. To those group of men and women that decided to storm the Capitol.
Okay.
And these are from David French. These are uh-huh. not from me. So I think that maybe we can get into this. One of the enabling lies, America will end if Trump loses this election.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Here's another lie. The fate of the church is at stake if Joe Biden wins.
Yeah.
And another here, also from him. The left hates you. And sometimes that phrase concludes with the phrase, and wants you dead.
Mm-hmm.
So these are the lies that are given through Twitter, news media, whatever, you know, Parler, mm-hmm. QAnon, 4chan, or whatever people are engaged
in. The pulpit on Sunday.
The yeah. pulpit on yeah. Sunday.
Yeah. That I think that's where it's really dangerous. Yeah. I mean, it's one thing yeah. if it's isolated to, oh, here's these people who are out on Twitter saying this stuff. But when you walk into your church on Sunday morning, and that's the message that you hear.
Yeah. yeah.
I mean, that comes with a particular weight and gravitas.
Yeah, I mean, that's yeah. the place that is supposed to reaffirm the way that you're supposed to live and be sure, yeah. sort of a beacon of truth in your life. And if they are feeding these lies to you, how are you really going to fight back against that, you know?
Sure, absolutely.
Without absorbing some of it.
Yeah, or yeah, without starting to believe
yeah.
it's true.
Yeah, and that's, I think, where the pity comes in.
Yeah.
Too.
And I think many of maybe the people who peddle these lies don't necessarily think that they're true, but they think that they're useful.
Right.
That this is a lie that motivates people to give. It motivates people to act. It motivates mm-hmm. people to show up, right? Like, right. if they're going to believe these things, it is instigating change in people. But we don't want it to go too far.
Right.
That you believe it so much that you're willing to maybe beat a police officer with a fire extinguisher.
Right.
You know, we don't want you to believe it to that point. But I think that the people who engage in these lies, forget if these things are true, that response is kind of justifiable.
I'm not 100% convinced that people who continue enabling these lies don't believe.
I'm not saying again. Yeah. I think there are people who do think these yeah, things, who do enable these lies.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not in someone else's head. I have a hard time imagining a pastor getting up and saying something that they don't believe to be true. I just have a hard time. Like, I think, like, to do that, I think you are, you know, you even if I disagree with everything that you stand for,
mm-hmm.
I do believe that you come to that with a sense of, I'm trying to help people. Even if I, you know, completely disagree with how you're trying to help people, you come with, and so I don't think you're going to get up there and lie. I think you're going to get up there and say something you think is true, even if what you think is true is just this gross, you know, thing that we see is just completely not rooted in fact. I don't know. I have a hard time getting my head around somebody standing up there and saying, well, this is just convenient, so I'm going to say it.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm overestimating people's...
I think it's human nature to believe something insofar as it's useful to us and then abandon that belief for something that is more useful for us. Yeah. But, I mean, that's probably a more cynical view of human nature than maybe I should even have. But.
No, sure. I think that's a reasonable thing, yeah.
Well, to say this to a point, and this is from more of the stage of politics, I saw at the RNC convention this past fall...
Sure.
Vice President Mike Pence got up there and concluded his speech with, "You will not be safe in Joe Biden's America."
Yeah.
And then found himself hiding while a mob of Trump supporters, of QAnon fanatics, whatever, chanted, "Hang Mike Pence."
Yeah.
Like,
because he had said, "I don't have the constitutional authority to do what President Trump is trying to order me to do." Yeah.
Now, does Mike Pence really truly believe in his heart of hearts America's not going to be safe in Joe Biden's America? Is he thinking,
probably not,
I got to get out of here, there's no way I can live in America for the next 4 years? I don't think so.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
I think that is, it's useful. It's a useful lie. So are there Christians, pastors, maybe who don't truly believe the fate of the church is at stake if Joe Biden wins? Maybe not to that level of extent, but maybe they're thinking, but it could be.
Yeah.
You know, so I think the church can fan these flames because they're also maybe engaged in it, or because, again, it can be useful.
But I wonder, too, how much of this is maybe not a fully baked thought, but how much of this is connected to sort of, like, the church evangelical revolution of, like, the 60s and 70s that I think we've talked about on here before, you know, where they decided to, like, that the church was under attack, as they knew it, and they were going to step into the political arena and push back against the, you know, so-called, like, free love culture or whatever.
Yeah.
And that is when the real fight against abortion started in the church. Mm-hmm. And I wonder how much of what we're seeing now is just the continued growth of that. You know?
I mean, sure. I think that's a reasonable thing. The church throughout history has had periods where it's had its power threatened and has often done horrible things to try to defend that power.
Yeah.
And I think this is a perception of the church's power being threatened.
Yeah.
Because we've had, you know, a couple 150 years or so of pretty much a Christian-dominated culture in the United States, and suddenly that's slipping away. So, yeah, I mean, look at the ways in which Rome responded to the Reformation and you know, some of the peasant wars that broke out in that process. There was violence that came in. And it was always really hard for Martin Luther to experience that, but that was the result of this thing that he was trying to lead people towards. But, I think that's a reasonable claim to make. I think that's a pattern that we see. People in power, whether they're working for a church or not, people in power will often do anything to hold on to that power.
Do we think the church should have power?
Politically?
Or in general? I mean, I think inherently the church has power because it is God and the word of God.
Right.
But I think, you know, socially and politically, should the church have power? Should the church be able to pull strings?
I think that's a complicated question. I think because the church does inherently have power, right? I mean, because we believe that we are, you know, the embodiment of Christ, right, at work in the world. Like, there are things that motivate us and drive us that the church can do that no other thing can do because we have that spirit blowing through us. Should we, like, be able to, like, pull strings? I don't think that we should get special treatment from a political entity just because we're the church. I mean, and we've talked about this in the podcast before, too, about, like, well, you know, should churches pay taxes, or should churches, you know, do this, or should churches have this privilege or that privilege? I don't think that churches should have special privileges in that sense. If a person wants to run for office and they think it's beneficial for them to express their personal faith, I have no problem with that.
Yeah.
But I don't think that that should be the sole thing that we judge. Like, I shouldn't vote for a candidate just because, oh, they're Presbyterian.
Right.
I want to vote for a Presbyterian.
Right.
Like, that shouldn't be our motivation. But I should be aware that that might be something that affects how I vote for somebody.
Oh, I think it's tough for us growing up. I've only lived in a world or in a country where the church had political power, like, for the entirety of my life.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's just the case it is. I do know, you know, reading some history of, like, when communism took over Russia and the USSR and outward professions of faith has been outlawed, the underground church thrived under that community. Mm-hmm. Like right. that when the fall of communism in Russia, there were more Christians than at the start, you know, like, yeah. so like you, I don't think the church needs political power to do the work yeah. of Jesus.
The fall of the Berlin Wall started by prayer meetings in a church.
Yeah.
Like that's what it came from. I mean, yeah. it's so yeah. Yeah. Jesus doesn't need political power.
Yeah.
If he did, if Jesus needed political power, he would have taken it.
Yeah. It yeah, seems to me though, that as a church, a broad church, right. Mm-hmm. We spend a lot of time scrabbling for political and social power.
Yes.
And I wonder if we should be spending our time there. No. I think, yeah. I mean, I think you can see like, Russia, Church of England, Rome, over and over again, it gets really messy when the church, you know, is political mm-hmm. power, mm-hmm. you know? So I don't know.
Sure, and I think we can say this, not just even from Christianity, I think this is every religion, whenever they're, like, if you're really under a theocracy, regardless of what that religion is, it's going to be bad, especially for people who do not ascribe to that right. theocracy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, like, I think, so, I think, I'm 100% with you, and I think we're all going to agree on this one.
Yeah.
The church's political power in America could be better used doing a lot more good for the actual church mm-hmm. and for the actual communities that they're in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that doesn't mean Christians should not use their positions to leverage
sure,
politics for to drive good in this world. And right. I think our government can be a force of that. But yeah, I'm 100% with you. I want to keep going here
yeah, sure.
before we get too sidetracked. Because
Sorry.
I also don't want to be
She's not really.
Too much of here sound like we're just beating up on the right side of Christianity. And I mean not the correct side, but the politically right-wing side. You know, what do you see as kind of the enabling lies that maybe mm-hmm. progressive Christianity mm-hmm. or progressive America or left-wing America could fall for or could be laying down gasoline for them?
Yeah, I think... the lie that I don't want to say this. All conservatives hate immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or maybe even just saying the Republican Party hates immigrants.
Sure.
I think yeah. would be a lie that that we feed the left as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One example.
Yeah, I think that certainly could be there, you know, and that's obviously not true, you right. know, but, you know, it's easy to grasp onto the concept or idea mm-hmm. of it mm-hmm. for the left, you know, to champion the cause of the immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think this is kind of true for both sides, but every time we kind of lump everybody into one category, an easily digestible category, yeah. that's really kind of being the lie. So mm-hmm. if anybody who says, hey, I'm fiscally conservative, I don't want higher taxes, I think that the free market is able to solve a lot of the world's problems, and to lump that into, well, you must be homophobic, mm-hmm. you must be
racist
yeah. these things yeah. that are not super fair to place right. on them.
Yep.
So even though I think the left maybe says, here are the reasons why I think conservatives are homophobic or are racist, by saying, and because of that, every person who ascribes to yeah. that is those things,
right.
is unfair.
Yep.
And I think it's also a little unfair for the left to, you know, and again, as a Christian, for my conservative Christian brothers and sisters to, especially on like LGBTQ rights and how they interpret the Bible, and they've seen these two things kind of come into conflict, and they've chosen how they interpret the Bible at a greater level than supporting LGBTQ mm-hmm. rights, that at its core isn't necessarily homophobic or, right. I would say, egregious. I think it becomes that yeah, when it's used quickly. As a tool against,
right.
you know, mm-hmm. the LGBTQ community. Or especially when they're not even Christians themselves. You right. know, like using that Christian values against non-Christians right. is right. not a useful
so-called
tool.
So-called traditional values.
Yes, mm-hmm. but I don't think saying, like, I understand and have a heart for the plight of the homosexual community, but I also trust in the Word of God how I read it. That's a really tough place to be, I'm yeah. sure, for a lot of conservative yeah. Christians and how to figure out. And so I think it's unfair to kind of paint with a broad brush on those levels.
Yeah, I think nuance is the key that's lost. When we feed enabling lies to ourselves or to others, we are immediately removing any ability to think for ourselves and to interpret people as individuals. And we're saying, you know, this is you, and we're putting everybody into a particular box. And that's always going to be dangerous. When we remove nuance from the discussion, it's always going to be dangerous.
Yeah, so I think he's also going to come in here. It's not just about the enabling lies, but there's actually kind of two kinds of liars. That there are the actual liars and their timid allies. So those are kind of what we have. So the actual liar is the one who's intentionally putting down these enabling lies.
Yep.
Maybe they believe them, maybe they don't, but they're kind of going out there saying these types of things, laying down the gasoline and the powder. And the timid allies are the ones who see this but don't really want to call it out or provide that nuance that you were kind of saying, because they know, look, if you're a conservative pastor in a southern city and you go out there and say, hey guys, I think this election was fair.
Yeah.
And I think we should pray for President-elect Joe Biden and Vice President-elect Kamala Harris, and that they can lead the nation wisely. You run the risk of alienating a large portion of your maybe a congregation. Mm-hmm. And so it's easy to either just remain silent on those things. And so that's not adding to those lies, but you're timidly supporting them with silence, if that makes sense. And I think that many aspects of the church, after we see violence in the Capitol, now are saying, oh, we decry violence, but this was a pot boiling over, and we could have started calming things down by turning off the stove long before it reached that level. And I think timid allies played a part of saying, like, well, it might boil over, but I don't want to alienate my position and the people that I work with. And I think that that's part of this. So I think that that's part of this problem as well, as we have kind of too many kind of timid allies of lies. And then, you know, you have to ask the questions, well, am I that, right? Like, am I a timid ally, you know, of the church? Do I need to use my Facebook to decry everything I see? Do I need to use this podcast to go out there, call out Christianity, call out these things? And I'm not sure that's necessarily how it's supposed to work. But I do know it means when Christians do see injustice, we should be active in ending it. And I think that's part. And I think one of the ways, and here, this is his example too, that I think is really, really good, to say, like, somebody could be a liar on this. If they sum up people who are critical of President Trump as they just dislike him because he has mean tweets, or he's bad manners, or he is kind of a bull in a china shop. And that's just not true.
Right.
The critics of Donald Trump don't like those things.
Right.
But that is not why they're critical of Donald Trump. Like, those are tangible evidence they may point to of a deeper issue. That's not like, if only he deleted his Twitter, then everything would be A-OK.
Right.
I mean, he hasn't had Twitter for
Twitter's deleted
a couple days now.
And I don't think everybody's like, well, good.
Yeah.
Phew.
Yeah.
All right, so any other thoughts on this? We're going to start wrapping this up here to his conclusion. But how do you want to, any other thoughts you have about this idea of timid allies?
Yeah, I think, you know, timid allies in particular, I think this gets back to what we were saying about before, right? If we're going to expect every Islamic person to decry every single act of violence that comes in the name of an Islamic extremist group, we have to be willing to step in and do the same. Mm-hmm. And we, as people of faith, we have to be willing to stand on that. And I think this is the part that even for me as a pastor is particularly difficult, because the message of Jesus Christ is intended to be for all people.
Mm-hmm.
But some people, even when that message is based in invitation, based in welcome, based in love, based in grace, even when that's the message, some people are going to choose to reject it.
Yeah.
And that is a hard truth to face, that someone is going to reject a message of love and grace because they prefer a message that allows them to continue to hold this particular extreme viewpoint one way or another, or allows them to maintain that particular stance. And as a congregation who is rooted in it, right, last year we approved these five core values, and the first of those values is welcoming all. And you know, so one of our driving principles is that we want to be a place where you can be Republican or Democrat, or you can be a Trump supporter or a Biden supporter, or you can be someone who's never voted in your life, whatever. You can be all those things and you can feel welcome here. That is our goal.
Mm-hmm.
But for some people, being that is going to make them say, no, I'm not welcome there. Yeah. Being a place where all people are welcome is going to make them say, I'm not welcome there. And that is, it is heartbreaking for me as a pastor. It is challenging for me just as an individual. And it's painful for me as someone who sees good people rejecting this possibility to experience something different. Which is not to say that we're perfect, right? You know, just because I say everybody's welcome doesn't mean I'm perfect or I have it all figured out. But it does mean that it's in a place where I want to continue to open myself up to grace, which I think is valuable. And it feels like when people reject this opportunity to be a part of community where everybody's welcome, they reject that opportunity to experience grace in that way. And I pray for them, not because I think they need... I don't pray for them because I think they're, you know, wrong. That's not why I pray for them. I pray for them because I want them to experience grace. That's what I want. I want them to know the love of God. And I don't feel like people fully know the love of God if this is the path that they are choosing.
Sure.
Which maybe is too harsh, but that's just worth that.
Yeah. I think that's what's tough. Well, he's going to conclude here. Although that was a great conclusion for us.
No, that's fine. We'll go with someone else. We'll go with Mr. French.
You're right. Good
luck. The conclusion of the French David.
All right. That rebuting enabling lies does not mean whitewashing the opposition. And it does not mean surrendering your values.
Can you please read this with a French accent?
No. It does not mean surrendering your values or failing to resist destructive ideas. It does not mean discerning the difference between a problem and a crisis, between an aberration and an example. And it means possessing the humility to admit when you're wrong. It means understanding that no emergency is ever too great to stop loving your enemies and blessing those who persecute you. And I think that's a valuable kind of reminder here too, that even if to your core of hearts you think Joe Biden's election is going to be the end of America, your Christian calling to love your enemies and bless those who persecute you is greater.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a greater calling. If Donald Trump was reelected president in this past election, some of us, myself included, might have fears and nervousness about what that means for the next 4 years for our country and our world. But that does not absolve me from wanting to love those that I would see as my enemies, whether political or otherwise. You know, thus that takes precedence. And so I think that that's a stark reminder here that those lies are out there. They're seductive and easy to latch on to. And we saw a group of men and women really latch on to those lies and seemed almost confused as to what they were supposed to do next. And then ironically seeing kind of the same people who fed them those lies quickly said, like, oh, no. Those people are just Antifa. Like,
and also, that's not what I meant.
yeah. Just, like, quickly, like, oh, you guys stormed the Capitol. You're definitely not with us. Right. Like very quickly, you know, spun to a new set of lies, regardless of if there's evidence of it or not. And I think that that is that reminder that how seductive these things are. And they're not just seductive for others.
Yeah.
That we have to start taking ownership of my own heart and saying, what are the seductive lies that are being fed to me that I'm seeking out?
Well, and he mentioned in there, right, that we have to be willing to admit when we're wrong. Like, I think, you know, hey, in 4 years, maybe we'll look back and say, wow, Trump's trade war with China, really did benefit American industry. Maybe that'll be a really good thing. But I think that will be overshadowed by all of this that has been fed over. And you know, President Trump's entire term in office has been overshadowed by just the constant bombardment of stuff that feels insane.
Yeah.
Like, because, you know, maybe there are policies that have been good. Maybe there are things that have benefited the economy. Maybe the middle class has been helped. I don't know.
Sure.
Because it has all been bombarded by this just constant barrage of what I would call outrageous tweet. And not even outrageous because I think they're right or wrong. Just outrageous because I can't believe these are the things that are being tweeted by someone who holds the office of the President of the United States. And, you know, and maybe in 4 years, we'll see, you know what? Joe Biden doesn't have any idea how to handle a coronavirus pandemic. You know, maybe we'll see, like, wow, we really blew that one. And that's okay. Like, we can look at that and say, okay, Joe Biden didn't do that. We don't know what the future is holding, but we do put our faith first. We put our identity as Christians before our identity as a citizen of the United States, before our identity as a citizen of a member of a particular party, or before our identity as someone who votes for one person or another. We are first and foremost a baptized child of God.
Sure.
And that means that if I see someone else who's a Republican, if they're a baptized, they are first and foremost a child of God. And if I see someone from another country that's a Christian, they are first and foremost a child of God. That is what makes us one. That's what Paul writes about over and over, that makes us one in the body of Christ. That we're not Jew or Gentile or slave or free or Republican or Democrat or Georgian or New Yorker or whatever. We are one in the body of Christ.
I think that's a challenge.
Georgia, right? And New York are the only states I could think of off the top of my head.
That's okay. That's okay.
Big players recently.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's both the challenge and the hurt of saying, like, and those men and women who storm the Capitol are children of God,
mm-hmm.
connected to me through the body of Christ.
Right. I may show up at the heavenly banquet table and the idiot with the horns on his head, he
Chewbacca
may be...
Chewbacca bikini.
Yeah, whatever. He may show up next to me, right?
Yeah.
The grace of God is as much for them as it is for me. And in moments like this, I hate it, but I still believe it's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oof. And as part of that call to something greater, my greatest hope for those people and for President Trump and all those who enabled some of these lies is not vengeance, but redemption.
Yeah.
A way to come to, I think, the reality of truth here. And that's my hope. And just like it's my hope for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris,
mm-hmm.
that's my greatest hope, is a redemption arc in Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, there we go. That was our thoughts kind of on the Capitol.
With an O.
With an O, yes.
Just to be clear.
Very important.
I spell Capitol with
thing.
A C.
You remember nothing else from this podcast.
Capitol with an O.
The building, Capitol with an O.
C-O?
Yeah, C-O-P-A-D-I-O-P-I. I can't even spell it. That went well. All right, hey, if you liked what you heard today, or if you didn't like what you heard, frankly, this is a podcast for all people. And so whether you liked it or not, let us know and give us some feedback. You can email us at beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com. And of course, share this out with your friends, whether they were watching the protests at home or whether they were in Nancy Pelosi's office, wherever they were.
Sure.
Share this with them and let us know what they think too.
If you've got an inroads with Buffalo, dude.
Yeah, sure. We want an interview.
Give him our podcast. Yeah.
Do we think that Chewbacca bikini is going to be his ghost outfit when he dies?
That's a good question. Yeah.
Is he going to come back and haunt the Capitol with an O in his Chewbacca bikini?
Yeah.
Who knows? Anyway, we hope you enjoy this and every podcast. And we'll see you next week on Beyond Sunday.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.
I already said that.
Why said it?
Fight.